Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS here with the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going strong for about 40 years now, mostly under the guidance of Dick K2RIW, who unfortunately became a silent key a few years ago. So we continue on in his memory. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you our usual links to be aware of. Okay, if you need to reach me and you can't talk to me on the radio here, then email is a good idea. So the idea is if you either have a mailbag question that you want to hear discussed on the Technical Net, or if you have a topic that either you would like to join in the discussion or hear the discussion, or if you have a technical puzzle. We always are looking for interesting technical puzzles. So we can use it as an instrument to remind people of stuff that they once knew or discover new stuff that they were unaware of. So those are tech puzzles. Or if you want me to tap Paul, WS2N of SpaceNet Report, on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at something, a website or a YouTube or space or NASA-related. So my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you want to email Paul directly, you can reach him. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. Also, have lots of interesting links. The top are space-related links that I won't discuss, but Paul often will. Or things that have a visual component that don't lend themselves much with radio. So those links are available at the top. At the bottom is a number of interesting news articles that I've collected over the past week. If you want to, we can discuss them, or you can just read them at your leisure. The link is available, and the link page can be reached by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. We have a chat room available to use, people. You can either go to Limark's own website, find the link, type it in, and click it, and get on, or you can type into your browser the line chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll take you directly to the chat room. And for people who can't listen directly on the radio and need some alternative method, I offer an internet stream of the Technical Net and of Glen Oaks repeater over 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's available by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. And as always, I'd like to remind people that Mike KC2NJI has a great archive of these Technical Nets going as far back as September 2006. That's amateurradio.tv is his website with over 1 million visitors. Let me drop for a second and I'll tell you my plans for tonight. Okay, nothing special tonight, the usual stuff. I will ask if people have any technical questions or topics or comments. Preferably, the first people should try and be the people who have amateur radio-related technical questions, although as the night progresses, we'll open things up wide to discuss any aspect of science, technology, and even medicine in generalities. So we do not treat nor diagnose over the radio, so keep that in mind. But all science topics are open for discussion here. I'll try my best to add what I have on the subject, and other people hopefully will add them as well. At 10:15, Paul will come on with the SpaceNet report. That should take us to 11 p.m. I'll return and wish everyone well and call it a TechNet. So that's my plans. If Mother Nature, radios, repeaters, and people listening in who are a little itchy with the push-to-talk button will allow. So, in that scheme of things, if there's anyone who has any questions of a technical nature, please hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
And 2XGN, Wesley.
2TGW, Les, with a comment.
Can I ask you, Roy? I'll take a listen for a little bit.
Okay, very good. Wesley, do you mind if I let Les give his comment? It sounds like it's going to be shorter than your segment.
Definitely. No problem.
Okay, Les, what's your comment?
All right. It could have been a year ago or so. We talked about I had a random wire antenna. And we talked about I was going to hook it up to my leaders and gutters. When I did do it, it was absolutely no difference in anything that happened. That's the first part of it. The second part of it is my wife and her infinite wisdom has allowed me to have a second shack on the first floor for those days that my arthritis and I don't get along, and climbing up the stairs to the second floor is, we'll just put it, is not comfortable. I had been reading about what is known as an HOA buster antenna. Manufactured by Alpha Antennas. The reviews have not been too bad, so I purchased it. It took 3 weeks for them to make it and another week for it to get here. It's a winner. Now, I will say that I do have some 200-some-odd feet of leaders and gutters around my house. It's a long house. I had to make one little a deviation to it, to the perfect thing that it was. I have RG8U lead-in wire, and it wouldn't fit on the bottom, but I had a 249 or 239 to 239 male to female in an L shape. And as they say, it works. It works. My only problem is I wonder what happens when it gets filled with snow or when it gets filled with rain. Is that going to change things drastically? Just an intuitive question. I'm not giving it back. K2TGW with the TechNet.
Okay, very good. I'm trying to figure out exactly what it is. I went to the website. It doesn't give me I can't find a really nice picture of it deployed. I see a length of wire and something that might be a ballon. I'm not quite sure. It could be just a loading coil, and then there's some mounts to it. So could you describe it so I get a better feel for it?
All right, as best I can. There is a very well-built stainless steel cylinder that sits on a footing that you... In my case, since I live near the water, just have to push into the ground. And on top of that, there is a ground wire which you hook, which has an alligator clip at the other end, which you hook onto your leaders or gutters or whatever you can connect to it. So what is inside that steel cylinder, I don't know, but your guess is as good as mine. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, so it's a mystery to both of us. I'm not quite sure if that's a ground wire. Do they call it a ground wire? Because, you know, it's just a wire connector. So my guesstimate to it would be, again, that this would be a part of a radiating antenna that includes your gutter system, I guess, and that the cylinder holds some kind of magical impedance-modifying device of unknown origin, whether it's a loading coil to increase the inductance or whether it's a ballon is a mystery, I guess, to us both. So it sort of depends upon how the thing actually works. I would imagine weather would modify the resonance to a degree, but not to a terrible degree, so you just need to kind of tune it as necessary.
Well, I have it hooked to an automatic antenna tuner, so that part's not a problem. As soon as it did get out of resonance, it would put it back. And I do think it's some kind of a loading coil. They tell you don't open it up because it limits all its warranties, etc. But the whole radiating part is my leaders and gutters, which go north-south or south-north and east-west and a couple of jig-jags around the den. Now, it is true it's only about 12, 14 feet in the air, puts a lot of leaders in gutters. I did try out in the 10-meter contest and a few other QSOs, and I got as good a report as I was ever going to get in anything else. As I said before, it's built like a tank. It's really a heavy item once you push into the ground. And the top has what you... Well, it's not really a grounding coil. That's the ground that leads to your alligator clip that hooks onto your leaders and gutters. Back to you, Roy. K2TGW.
Okay, I wouldn't describe it as a grounding coil or a grounding wire because it seems to be connected to your coax cable. So you wouldn't want to really ground your coax cable. You'd end up zeroing out your signal. So what probably is going on is this is a short length of wire to connect to your gutter system, and then you have a loading coil beyond it, and that feeds into the coax cable, and you have a counterpoise slash ground as part of the mounting equipment. So, depending upon how efficient the grounding system works and how good of a counterpoise it applies, that'll kind of determine the efficiency. But, you know, if you're getting out, then you're getting out. So any antenna that works is a good antenna.
Well, part of my thing was we've had a number of people that when I list, you know, always who live in restricted areas. Now, I was thinking of taking it to be with me to Florida to my daughter and son-in-law's house, but they don't have any leaders and gutters in Florida. For whatever reason, they don't have those things. So that didn't work. It wasn't going to work out that way. But I find it quite, as my wife said, she didn't like the clothesline that was coming out of the south side of the house. Of course, it was an antenna, and that was a limit to her concerns. And after all these years of marriage, she's not going to argue with another antenna since it's got to be 7 or 8 hanging out on the north side of the house. But I like it, and you don't know it's there. Let's say you were trying to sneak around my house and tripped over it. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, it sounds like a great little device. Alpha Delta make very good antennas generally. Their antennas, a lot of them tend to be near vertical incidents. They're kind of specialized in local communication. So a lot of their antenna designs are not really meant for long distance propagation, but they do build almost military spec-graded hardware. So it's probably a real strong device, and from its appearance, it's incredibly stealthy. You're basically using your gutter and a little loading coil that's kind of hidden at the ground. Other HOA type of antenna systems that I've heard are very popular down south are flagpoles, in which they put a wire inside a fiberglass pole and put an American flag at the top of it, and that's rather stealthy as well. I think some HOAs rather are a little bit more aware of that these days than they have in the past, but that's another great HOA buster.
WB2KWC with a question.
Yes, Ken.
Okay. Les, I'm curious, did you have to make any special connections? I'm assuming you attached the HOA buster to the leader, and then that went up to the gutters. Did you have to make any special electrical or physical connections between various portions of your drainage system, or just hook it up and it worked?
Well, Ken, I live in an expanded ranch, and it's a long house. So it's got to be 100 feet north-south or south-north, another 60, 70 feet wide. And it's all connected. It's all connected above the first floor. So I really didn't have, that's all I needed to do. It really depends on how or where you live. But I knew I could get away with just, you know, that one lane, because that would be the full length of my leaders and gutters.
Okay. So you're saying that you did not have to do anything to electrically connect them. You just connected this gadget to your leader, and poof, your all the metal around your house is an antenna.
Exactly correct, Kenny.
Ah, a very interesting gadget. I'll have to go take a look at it. Thank you for the information, Les.
My pleasure. That's the reason I brought it up. I know people have a problem, and it's not inexpensive, though. It's, you know, for what it looks like, it's $275 with the taxes and shipping, so it's not cheap, but, you know, as I said before, you won't know it's there unless you're trying to sneak around my house. Roy?
Yeah, and like I mentioned, Alpha Delta makes real heavy-duty equipment, so this is not something where the weather's going to get into it over the winter. They have a very good reputation. And most of their equipment is kind of high-priced. But again, you're getting probably a rather hefty device. I'm sure it's got a little bit of weight to it, right, Les?
Got a lot of weight. I said it's all made of stainless steel. Amazing.
Okay, very good. So, you know, you get what you pay for. So this is not an MFJ aluminum tin can type of thing. So, it depends upon what kind of gutter system you have. You got to kind of, unfortunately, experiment. Some people have short lengths of gutter that are strapped together by non-conductive means or corroded means, so for them this would not be the perfect solution. But if you have a long run of contiguous conducting gutters, certainly is low impact on your house. There's no real profile, as Les mentioned. So excellent. I'm glad to hear it. I would really love if you got a V&A. If you can do a sweep of that thing, because I'd love to see what kind of waveform it generates.
That I don't have the ability to do as of now. Right now, I'm happy it works. It took a minimal amount of work, and let's just say, not the best weather, but you know what? When you have a purpose, it's not so cold.
Yes, you get distracted, but, you know, sometimes you shouldn't get distracted. Some of the weather is really too cold to play around on roofs or such, but you're a big guy, you're a grown guy, you know, what you're capable, what you're not. But that's fascinating, and it's interesting to know that, I was unaware of this particular model. Every so often I wander over, to Alpha Antenna and see what they're selling. So I'm curious when they brought this out, because I haven't visited their website apparently since this thing came online.
What I gather, it's been out a couple of years, but every once in a while it pops up someplace, and I was fascinated by it, and I wanted it, so I bought it, and I'm happy I got it.
Okay, very good. I'm a little confused. The first picture on the page shows it seemingly attached to a tree. And as far as I'm aware, trees don't have gutters. So is there some setup where you don't hook it up to a gutter? The second picture has a bunch of gutters shown. So I'm trying to figure out exactly what the tree is for.
Decoration?
Okay, I'm just curious. It looks like it's hooked up to the tree, and the tree is not directly next to a building. So I'm not quite sure if the idea is that they ran it up the tree and then across the tree to a gutter system. I'm not quite sure.
I have no idea. I remember seeing that picture, but when I researched it, they said just hook it in the ground and hook it up. Put your coax to it. I said the only thing I had to change since they have R8GU, real thick stuff, so it wouldn't get inside, so I use an L. Other than that, out of the box.
Okay, very good, Les. Thank you for sharing that with us as another option in how do you sneak an antenna into the neighborhood. We can always use those. Thankfully, I don't belong to any kind of HOA, and I own my own house, and I got neighbors, but I don't think they even realize what's on the roof. It's sort of amazing the tricks that the human mind plays. If you just elevate something 20 feet off the ground, no one looks up, so no one really cares.
No, everybody knows I'm a ham, so, but that's not the problem.
Okay, very good, Les. Thank you for sharing and participating, and one of these days you gotta tell us some great fish stories of what that antenna was able to do for you.
Will do. Pass on.
Okay. Just want to throw out if anyone else has any questions or comments tonight and wants to be put on the list, if you hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign, I'll write you down.
Alpha, Bravo 6, Mike, Bravo.
Oh, hello, Jeff. How are you tonight? Do you have a question tonight or a comment tonight?
I have a couple comments about an MSJ apartment antenna and also about a Parks on the Air talk given to our club here Saturday. I'd like to comment on those, AB6MB. And I'm doing pretty good, by the way, AB6MB.
Okay. Are you in a rush, Jeff? Because otherwise Wes is ahead of you tonight.
I'm in no rush. Believe me, this it can wait. Thank you. Maybe 6MB.
Okay, very good. So, Wesley, what would you like to discuss tonight?
Okay. And to XGN. First, feel free to interrupt me at any time if there's a problem with my signal. And we're going to deal with that. So how am I coming out first? And to XGN, Dr. Roy, how am I coming out?
Well, there's a little strangeness. There was a little dropout, and there was a buzzing noise. So I think the people with itchy trigger fingered PTTs are still around.
How is right now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How am I coming out now?
You're fine. After you let go of the push to talk, there's some hash noise, but while you're talking, I can hear every word perfectly.
Okay, beautiful. I can make it better. This is Andrew XGN. So I'm going to be talking about the devices that are used by ham radio amateurs and are extremely useful and good for everybody to have. Okay. So we have a few devices. One of them, before I go to it, I give you a comparison with what is commercial on the market and what is extremely inexpensive for us to be used and made by ham radio amateurs. If we everybody heard probably about the Vector Network Analyzer, and it's extremely expensive device. I have few of them in my lab, and of course, one thing that this thing doesn't do is that what actually I'm going to be talking about. So comes about Vector Network Analyzer. The Vector Network Analyzer utilizes the measuring the transmitted and reflected waves as the signal passes through a device on the test. the measuring the transmitted and reflected signals across the band of interest and often beyond enables the characteristics of the device to be determined. And both transmitted and reflected signals can be characterized. So we can measure reflection parameters, we can have standing wave ratio, SWR, VSWR, we can have different kinds of reflection coefficients, anything that is done by vector network analyzer. And then we have a particular device, which is commercial and is being called vector network analyzer, VNA. And RF vector network analyzer is the test instrument that measures response of the network as a vector, real, imaginary parameters, so its performance can be characterized. I'm not going to go deep to it. Let's go to hard part. LP-100A. It is made by Telepost Incorporated, that's the ham radio operator, extremely talented person, and with that review, I'm going to also ask Dr. Roy to participate in it. He's going to tell you about that, what I don't tell. So that thing gives me that what my VNA doesn't. I have to have a disconnected power. I can measure everything that I want with my feed line, antenna, and impedance matching, reflection coefficients. But what about if I want to know all of it and have all of these graphs and have Smith chart, all of it, while live when I'm transmitting it? So here's the story. Just a few minutes ago, you were talking about, Dr. Roy was asking, it's good if you have a VNA or you have, nano-VNA? Well, yes. It's a good small device, it's portable, but you can have also a very small and sort of portable device that gives you all of it while you're putting 10,000 watts or 15,000 watts on it. We're not talking only 5 watts, 100 watts. We're talking any power. LP100A is a digital vector wattmeter, but actually it does everything what my VNA does. With complex impedance display R plus JX, also ranging from 50 milliwatts to 3 kilowatts, 5 to 10 kilowatts option, bright, fast graphic display, and has power and SWR, the reflected power, the numerical bar graph, additional displays for dBm, RL, compression and calibration field strength in dBm, automatic band by band power correction, comparison between peak power and average power in the same screen. It has frequency counter, peak hold mode, flash upgradable firmware, serial interface, free control monitoring, plotting software, and SWR alarm. So let's say I'm talking right now, and let's say something happened to my antenna, and I spent plenty of money for my rig, and now I'm about to lose it. So it's going to give you audible a indication for you to look at the screen and eventually find out what's going on in a matter of seconds. Okay. So, how am I coming out, Dr. Roy?
Perfect. No dropout at all. Wonderful signal.
Thank you very much. I can do much better. Much, much better. Okay, so LP100A features and specs. I'm going to go quickly because it's 10 minutes of reading. That's what one device does. It's called Spanish. So, graphic display, front panel, large scrolling setup screen, call entry, display brightness, screensaver, timers, 40 megahertz processors, per band calibration, up to 0.1%. And frequency counter. Then we have GRX phase display, not affected by local broadcast stations, as an antenna analyzers could be, so that's a good thing. Super wide auto ranging, 50 milliwatts to 3,000 watts, without additional option to 15 kilowatts. It goes from 160 meters to 6 meters, so it goes to 52 megahertz. For QRP, QRO, or any O. The device is extremely small. It can also be used not by one station, but by two. Let's say you have two transceivers or three transceivers. The two transceivers is just required to connect the two directional couplers to the same device, and in one device you can see all of it for both of them independently. But let's say you have a three transceivers or three antennas, one transceiver, you can have that option that one device can monitor all of it. Then you have, those optional couplers could be for 5 kilowatts and 10 kilowatts also. Then you have a bar display or sticky bar display to play through 12-bit analog-digital conversion with resolution 1 watt when you do have a 2,000 watts output. Then you have, actually I went through it. Let me go further. Okay. You have five basic modes. One would be normal vector, DBM, field strength, peak to average, and probably I forgot about something. You can immediately see what's going on, but then there is much better. Larry made something better than this, and I believe Dr. Roy is going to say more about it. I'm going to give you just a little description. So now you don't need any computer. You have a visual display, and you can see all of it on touch screen. The LP500 is a digital station monitor which displays detailed information about transmitted signals of the station, and it displays a sample signals in numeric format, including power, SWR, with various oscilloscope type displays. If I'm not mistaken, it does have a Smith chart too, on the screen, and plenty of other stuff. But there is much better than this, LP700. And Dr. Roy, please take the microphone and explain to the audience what is it.
Okay, I think you're a little bit extra thrilled with the 700. The only difference between the 500 and the 700 was Larry, who I know. I've corresponded via email. I've beta tested some of his equipment. The only difference between the 500 and the 700 is the screen is larger. For elderly hams who eyesight is failing them, he configured it with a bigger LCD screen. The problem with that, though, is there are two sets of buttons. If you go to his website, there's lovely pictures all over the place. There are hard switches at the bottom, but as Wesley mentioned, it's a touch screen, so you can touch the buttons and software. But the buttons that line up on the LP500 don't quite line up on the LP700. So the only real difference is that it's a little bit bigger and easier for the eyes.
And that is extremely important because most of us wear eyeglasses. So that's why you say LP700 is better. If there are any questions, then we're going to respond to that, and if not, we go to another subject.
Okay, Wesley, I have a couple little comments to make as well. Yeah, one of the things I wanted to say, the LP100A, very nice piece of kit. It does not do sweeping, so you cannot, as most VNAs, since they have an internal oscillator, you can sweep them across any kind of given frequency range and collect a graph of resonant peaks and valleys. You can't do that with the LP100. It will just operate on whatever frequency your transmitter is using. When Larry designed the LP500/700, he sort of designed it in a way that they wouldn't cannibalize the sales for the LP100A. So their features are not equivalent. There is no Smith chart because the LP500/700 does not actually do impedance calculations. It'll give you a VSWR. And it does a lot of other things. It is able to inject a two-tone signal into your transmitter and then operate as a kind of spectral graph and oscilloscope and tell you whether there's some distortion in your signal. Also, you can hook up one coupler to your exciter and the other to your linear amplifier, and it will calculate the linearity of your linear amplifier in a trapezoid configuration. So there's a lot of very nice features, although the LP100A and the LP500/700 have slightly different functionality. I have a 500. I love it. Unfortunately, Larry has the same problems that I perceive with Flex Radio. He really hasn't had time to improve the firmware. The firmware, I think, is dated 2018. He has kind of promised that he was going to have software that would run on a computer and you'd be able to resize the image, make it big, small, wherever. I think he's returning to it now, but for the last 4 years, he feverishly has been just kind of building these things and shipping them out. Let me drop for a sec. One of the great stories I can tell you about the LP500, it was something that I really, when I first looked at the prototype, I said, gee, that is a great toy. I must have that toy. Problem was, it was a prototype. So you could put your name on a list, and eventually when he manufactured them and sold them, he would take it from the list. So I stayed on the list for about three and a half years. I went through the trials and travails of design and production. At one point, some of the circuits, the chips that he had used to build the prototype went out of production. And so he had to redesign the prototype, and we got a better display out of it, thankfully. But that delayed things, and, you know, it was kind of a soap opera at times. Finally, about 3.5 years later, I got my LP500. I have it sitting here proudly, and I use it. It's hooked up to my Flex. You need to get couplers. It's a two-part design. There's the display and computer part, and then there are couplers that are designed for different bands and different power ratings. And it's lots of fun to play with.
Yeah, any questions? Okay, a little bit more. The pricing. Sorry, I'm trying to advertise, but it's important for everybody's pocket. The LP100, I'm not sure how much, but it's about $300, maybe a little bit more. The LP500 is $650, LP700 is $720. This is not a big deal. If you have 3 kilowatts, then additional for the coupler would be $150, and depends how many couplers do you want. Then if you want to have 10 kilowatts power, then it's $225. Yeah, but that's the SO239 connection. If you want to have N connector, then it's 250. So we're not talking about big power, big money being spent for it, but it's a great stuff. Any questions? Okay. MFJ4603 window antenna feeds through the Lux panel. Dr. Roy said that he's got it too. And I would appreciate if Dr. Roy say a few words about it. It's $129.95. The problem that I usually had is I didn't want it to drill the holes in my window. And I had plenty of wires, and then I had a draft. And this thing could be a metal with wooden sealer, divider, how do you call it? Dr. Roy, pick up.
Yeah, it's a rather simple window insert for people who would rather do it themselves. It is not that difficult. You get a plank of wood and saw it down to the diameter of your window. These particular things are designed and painted, hopefully. I think once I had to deal with one that part of the painting wasn't done, so I opened up a can of white paint that I always have and finished the job. But they come in different designs. Most of them will have stainless steel screwed into the front and the back, and the core of the wood hollowed out. And they'll put a series of barrel connectors and screw lugs and all kinds of interesting things, which was my first design. I found, unfortunately, that because using long lengths of cable, if I didn't cut them down to proper size and let them have really big rain drips, they put too much weight on the barrel connectors, and after a while the barrel connectors started to become intermittent. So I swapped it for another design that really is just shielded holes. I run the cables through the holes so the excess can stay indoors and doesn't weigh things down, and I take some regular, putty and weatherproof it every so often. And I find that easier than putting other holes in my wall. I already have walls, holes that cable companies have made and Fios has made, so I don't want to have a lot of holes in my wall. So I use that. And I found it great. Again, you could do it to yourself with some wood, some white paint, and a drill. But, I found it easier this way.
So, okay, so the model number is MFJ4603. And the little description, it comes with wood, real Western red cedar wood, naturally resist to rot, decay in insects, and insects last longer, maintenance free. I'm reading pitch and resin free, or whatever. Waterproof, fit through panels, HF, VHF, UHF, antennas, balance lines, random wire antennas, ground, DCAC power, and rotator antenna switch cables into the ham shack. Now they have five different models of that. Depends what kind of connectors do you need, and you can order it from there. From that, what I see is MFJ 4600, 4601, 4602, 3, 4, and 5. Any questions? Okay, let's go to another subject. This is the last one, FTDX10. FTDX10 HF 50 megahertz 100 watts SDR transceiver. It's a hybrid SDR configuration, and it was there is a company, Dr. Roy, what is the name of that company that makes the testing of the all Sherwood, yes?
Yes, Sherwood is an engineer. He maintains a receiver specs page.
Okay, so we have FTDX 101, which is the best rated radio on the market. It's a quite new one. There was FT101 before, now it's FTDX 101. And then we have FTDX10, but in between we have a flex radio of Dr. Roy. So what happened is Sherwood placed this FTDX, the tiny radio, FTDX10, on the third position among all of the radios. Dr. Roy.
Okay, the FTX10 is an interesting device. It, as far as I can recall, is not a full band SDR. I think it's one of those that we talked about earlier that feeds off of the IF stage, and it digitizes a smaller portion of the HF band, and then it works like a standard SDR. With some of the nice features that we talked about SDRs having.
Let me give you some more. It has 100 watts, 6 meters, which is 50 megahertz. It's utilized hybrid SDR, sampling SDR, the narrowband SDR receiver emphasized excellent receiver performance by direct sampling as it provides digital scope.
Wesley? Yeah, we seem to have that problem where someone is throwing out a dead carrier on you.
Is it clear now?
Yes, the last few bits was, but, you know, he may kind of come back again. I don't know.
Well, I'm usually a very quiet person, and it's very hard to get me upset. Let me put it this way. I have 2 laps right now, worth plenty of money. I don't mind spending $10,000-$20,000, and I'm going to get you by the balls. I track you down. I have 18 elements antenna that I can direct to the receiver with 5 watts, and I'm going to be the strongest station on the repeater. Do you get it? Now you got me mad. This is N2X again. Okay. Let me go further. So with that radio, hold on. It happens to me every 10 years that I'm getting upset like that. I don't mind spending $30,000 to get the best guys on the market. I'm going to get you down. Get you to the FTC. Okay, fine. So we have 250 HRTDS high resolution and direct digital synthesizer. We have a 3DDS, three-dimensional spectrum stream. We have a front panel design for, 15 separate band pass filters. Effective QRM rejection with the IF DSP, IF shaped width, if notch, IF notch, DNF, DNR, counter, high quality and super stable final amplifier, utilizing the new push, MOSFET, whatever. RF, AF transmit, I'm trying to read what is there so you, Dr. Roy, can compare. And to XGN.
Well, I don't have the specs of my Flex radio. You know, modern designed radios are all very nice. They have different price points. They have different features. I kind of like my full band SDR versus an IF because it gives you more opportunity to digitize, process, and image of a wider spectrum. So, like I can with my Flex 6700, I can kind of look at the entire HF band simultaneously. You obviously couldn't do that if you were feeding off of a much more narrow IF stage. So, yeah, but it's a good piece of equipment. Yaesu has a good, it is a good brand name. A lot of people own a lot of equipment. I have some mobile radios and handy talkies made from Yaesu. So they make good stuff, and the FTX10 is a good entry-level SDR. They also make other SDR radios. There's one where it has two bands. One is an IF narrow band, and the other is a wide band that goes directly from the front end. So it's all good.
Okay, that's it. Those are all things that I had to discuss. There are a few things that I could mention about the screwdriver antennas. There was various types of screwdriver antennas I was interested to buy. All of them start from, including diamond, $1,000 up to $5,000, but most of them are not available because manufacturers died out. That means the ham radio operators who were owners of those facilities, they died out. So one of them was Scorpion. I believe the name was Larry, but I'm not sure. The Scorpion screwdriver antenna, it was Black Widow. Great antenna, absolutely amazing antenna. And then there was a Little Turhill. This one, I spoke to the lady. She says, I'm 82, and my guy who is doing it is older than me, and 12 weeks for waiting if you want to order that antenna. Then I spoke to Radio World and a few others, and they say they're going to have some of the screwdrivers for 100, 200 watts maximum. In March, so because they have limited amount. There is another company called Ham Radio Outlet. They also have Diamond Hustler and Butternut. Butternut is not a screwdriver. Butternut HF9V is a quite nice antenna, 9-band antenna that could be used for HF. I was on HF for probably about 12 years, but recently I decided that I'm going to take one of my transceivers and play a little bit with it. By the way, 10 meters is open, Dr. Ray.
Well, 10 meters is sort of open. It depends upon the time of day. Well, it always depends on the time of day, but it really depends on minute by minute, because I have a 10-meter net every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on 28.380 upper sideband. Everyone is welcome to join in. And today and yesterday was the 10-10 contest. So you had a lot of activity on 10 meters because of that 10-10 contest. So yesterday I was looking on 10 meters and it was jumping all over the darn place. And I was looking forward to this morning's 10-meter net, but unfortunately the ionosphere got a little fatigued, apparently, because when I got to it at around 10:30 and looked at the pan adapter, it was dead. There was nothing going on at all. And then throughout, I was there from 11 o'clock to 12:30, 12:30, 12:40. Every so often, it would kind of wake up, and you'd see a bunch of separate conversations, and then it would go flat again. So it was very erratic this morning and early afternoon. Yesterday, it looked a lot more consistently active. My understanding was there was a lot more activity Wednesday and Thursday on the sun, and that's what lit up our ionosphere and caused that.
Yeah, I heard yesterday also 7 megahertz was open. Did you listen to that band?
Yeah, I mean, 7 is usually open. I've repeatedly told people that at least until the sunspot activity really gets busy, one of the most consistent bands these days and for the last 5-6 years have been 40 meters, kind of consistently. 80, you got to wait until the sun drops down and nighttime begins. And, you know, 20 is very iffy. In the middle of the day, you might get something, you might not. But 40 is consistently my go-to band. I can't remember a single time where I've gone to 40 meters and it's been quiet. There's always some activity on it, it seems.
Okay, that is all that I have for tonight. One more sentence to the person who was interfering with me. The problem is that when you wanna deal with Polish Jew, you're gonna find out how he's dealing with Polish Jew. I'm gonna find every little thing about you, everything, and get you by any possible angle, by the law, and to exist.
Well, I hope we could all kind of live together in peace. This is a hobby. The idea is to have fun. And if you're not having fun, then find something else to do. It would be my recommendation. There have been people who've suggested that this isn't a malicious force, that you might be over-deviating the repeater. I don't know if that's what's going on. It's just that there are different things that happen. And lately what happens is your volume goes all the way down, which usually isn't from over deviation as far as I understand the concept. But I hope we can all live together, and I thank you, Wesley, for your participation tonight. Craig, you kind of signed in. You didn't quite have a question. It was kind of like, let's see what develops. So has a question developed in your mind, Craig? Certainly, Andy, anytime.
All right, I'm not going to be on long. I'm just about home. I've been shopping. I just wanted to know if W2BZ is listening, because he called me. And I returned his call, left a message. So is he happen to be on the net?
USL Andy, Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Okay, I'm not going to be able to have a discussion, but I'd like to find out, because I'm just about home, and I got to go to work tomorrow, so I got to get ready. Did you play out the antenna? And if you did, you could talk about it.
Andy, I wasn't able to take it down. I left a message on your machine. I wasn't able to take it down because some part was frozen. I had some bolt that was frozen that I just couldn't undo. So I'm going to try again tomorrow. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, no problem. No problem. I just wanted to know. That's why I called you earlier. And I'm on my street, so it's short and sweet right now. But I'll be back, and I will we'll find out what's going on with that. Kind of curious.